This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Thursday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Mary Kitzmiller in Las Vegas, Nevada, and you are listening to a special training episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for December 10th, episode 1316, Good Morning Horse World.
What is your favorite day of the week?
You never stop learning, you never stop understanding. It's more in depth than just riding a horse. Exciting, knowing that for the rest of my life I could work on this and I'll never stop learning.
Well, are you tired of that sound yet, Mary?
Well, I never get to hear that sound because I keep losing.
Mary's in Vegas out there for the national finals. Rodeo. Do you want me to keep that going, like the background sound of Vegas?
No, it just makes me sad.
Good morning, Mary. It's kind of early for you this morning.
Yes, this is a few hours before my normal wake-up time. You know, I'm a horse person, but I've never, ever been a morning person, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, normally it's 8 o'clock when you start with the show, and now you're on Jamie time. 6 o'clock in the morning in Vegas. And, oh, that's the quietest time of day in Vegas because nobody's up.
It is actually very quiet out.
Yeah, there's no traffic, there's no nothing, and you can't find coffee, because Jennifer and I are early risers, and we'd go down, and Jennifer would have to get her coffee, because for some reason, they don't put coffee pots in the hotels in Vegas, and we would go down to find coffee. Well, there's nothing open until like 9 o'clock, so yeah, it wasn't good.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. I haven't been up this early in Vegas yet, so I have to see what's available.
And have you been partying every night with the cowboys from the rodeo?
You know, not so much. I've kind of gone to bed a little early, but I've played in the casinos at night, which is fun. Like I said, fun and sad because I have apparently terrible luck.
That's that they count on your terrible luck. All those bright lights are thanks to your terrible luck.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm happy to make a donation.
It must be crowded. I mean, you had the AAP there. You had all the vets there. You have NFR, which draws what 100,000 people plus. You got Cowboy Christmas going on, and Lord knows what other conventions. So does it seem crowded?
You know, not really, because I was expecting crowds in Vegas anyway. It's really not too bad. You know, I haven't had to wait too long to get in anywhere. And there are definitely a lot of cowboy hats out and about. So, yeah, it's really not been too bad at all.
Now, well, we'll talk more about it in a minute. But let's find out what's coming up in today's show, because you have one hell of a show planned for today.
Well, now I feel inadequate. On today's Session Training with Mary Kitzmiller episode, seeing as how Mary is hanging out in Las Vegas, we thought we'd stay on the wild side. And we're going to have a chat with the mad genius behind Zebras Are Us, Dominique Ferrero. And then after the break, we will be joined by the Australian darling of equestrian enthusiasts everywhere, Guy McLean. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. So where are you staying right now?
I am in Paris, Las Vegas.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, and you can see, yeah, I'm right next to the Eiffel Tower, and they've got a...
You can't climb that one, though, right?
Yeah, well, there's a restaurant up in there.
Oh, really?
And you take an elevator to the top, which I haven't done yet. I looked at the restaurant menu, and it was like escargot for $75, so I might save that one for later.
Yeah, okay. Snails for $75.
give or take.
Those are expensive snails.
Yeah.
You come here to Florida, we can give you all the snails you want.
Yes. Yeah. Obviously, it's a French restaurant, so.
Yeah. That means you get three little tiny snails for $75, but it's in a lot of sauce.
Exactly.
That's a lot of sauce. Well, have you hit the buffets yet?
You know, I've only been to one buffet. They were telling me there's a ton of buffets here. I haven't found them yet. There's one in my hotel, which was really, really good. And I load up on my buffet usuals, which is potatoes and macaroni and cheese. So I had starch with a side of starch. Just how I like it.
That doesn't know Mary, let's just put it this way. She has the palate of a 6-year-old.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Like the exact same words.
Because I've been out to dinner with you before, and it pretty much is a palate of a 6-year-old. It's you know, she'll eat meat, but it has to be accompanied by the potato and no green stuff on the plate. Just don't put anything green on there. Am I wrong?
Oh, that's exactly right. And
you'd be a cheap date.
I would be. Yeah. So, you know, I should get asked out on more of those because I'm very economical.
You know, you're the exact opposite of Jamie, the vegan. You're the exact opposite. It's like nothing green, please. I thought I was bad. You know, Jennifer picks on me because I grew up a meat and potatoes family too. And so, you know, I'm not into a lot of the vegetables and stuff. And so Jennifer always picks on me. And then remember when we had dinner out there in Texas with the group? I was like, no, you haven't seen Mary. She makes me look like I eat a ton of stuff.
Yeah. No, I'm pretty bad. So, you know, I went to Italy a couple summers ago, and I was like, well, this is nothing like Olive Garden at all. And
all right, what's going on in Vegas? Have you seen any rodeo, or are you out there to shop?
Mostly to shop. I've been keeping up with, you know, the cool thing about it out here is they've got big screens everywhere and they're playing the rodeo as you're walking around. They even had it playing in my casino last night.
Oh, really? Wow.
So yeah, I've been keeping up with some of the action there and, you know, may try and score some tickets and head out there tonight.
Very cool. And is your mom along?
She is.
Oh. The two of you together shopping, I can only imagine. You would need like a little kid with a little red flyer wagon to carry all your stuff.
Yeah, pretty much. We found a lot of cool stuff.
So what was your highlights shopping? What's the thing? You know how when you go to these things, there's always something, especially around the holidays, especially around Christmas, that is a theme that year. Like everybody has this or everybody has that, but everybody has it this year and you won't see it again in 2 years. Is there that kind of theme going on this year?
Not that I can see. Of course, you know, the staples when you sell retail is jewelry and clothing, right? Especially if you're selling to women. So there's a ton of that, tons and tons of handbags. There's some really, really nice tack out there. Oh, there's a bridal here that was featured in the Fusion show what's that called? The Buck Brannaman Invitational Roping out in California. They also had a silver show out there, and they invited all these really well-known silver makers to make a bridle. And this one bridle, I got to hold it. It is tons of silver, and I think the leather has like stingray inlay. The conchos has gold and black. It's encrusted with little black diamonds and red sapphires.
Can I guess?
Yet guess totally.
5,000.
Oh my God. No, that's insulting.
Oh, sorry. That just went over the price of 99% of English tack right there. Yeah. So, yeah, okay, yeah. 10,000.
Nope.
No.
Keep going.
Really? I didn't think silver was that valuable. 15,000.
A little higher.
20,000.
A little bit more.
Oh my God. How much was this thing?
I think it was right around 30,000.
For a bridle.
Yes. Well, this isn't to go throw on your horse. This is like an art piece. So, oh my gosh, and it was gorgeous. And I wish I could name the maker right now. but I can't. But yeah, so they had that there, which I had seen it on Facebook and drooled over it, and I saw it there, and I just, yeah, the vendor let me hold it and look at it.
Okay, Jennifer, I have a question for you to post on our Horses in the Morning page. This is the question of the day. Okay. All right.
Of the day.
All right. Tell everybody that Mary found the $30,000 bridle at the NFR for sale. What would a bridle have to be made out of for you to spend $30,000 on it? Because I'm trying to think, it would have to be more than silver. I gotta say, I guess it's gonna have to be.
Well, and it is more than silver because it's not just silver. But I will send you a picture.
Oh later. Yeah, we'll have to post a picture on our Facebook page.
Yeah, you will appreciate the craftsmanship in this thing. It's amazing.
All right, we'll definitely do that. You didn't buy it, did you?
Oh no. I'd have to finance.
Yeah. Do you take loans? Well, there's plenty of loan sharks in Vegas. You'd be fine.
Yeah.
and ATM machines about every 10 feet. So you're good. Well, that's fun. So are you having a good time out there?
Oh, yeah. It's been wonderful.
So now everybody's curious, I'm sure, what you've bought.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I have bought, we've bought some really cool, there's a vendor here we really liked called Britt West, and she's kind of a jack of all trades. She does cool clothing and jewelry, and she's been in Cowboys and Indians and, you know, those types of magazines. So I got a really cool hat band and some bracelets from her. Got a new hat from Greeley Hat Works.
Boy, you know, I was shocked the first time I went to something like this and saw how expensive cowboy hats can get. You can spend thousands on a cowboy hat.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I saw your new hat. You look sharp in your new hat.
I know. It's a 5-inch brim, which is exactly what I've been looking for.
Now, are you in that part of Texas where you need the bigger brim?
I'm more east of that area. And, you know, the funny thing is I picked up my first 5-inch brim, maybe 5 years ago at the Fort Worth Stock Show. And at the time, no one outside of West Texas was wearing those suckers. And I got mercilessly made fun of for it, especially because I was still showing NRHA at that point. So people were like, why are you wearing that? and it's slowly come in style. It's gotten more mainstream. And actually, I had a girl run me down at the stockyards a couple years ago, like, oh, my God, where'd you get that hat? And so now that I've worn a 5-inch brim, if I go back to 4-inch, I feel like I look like Howdy Doody a little bit.
Is there that much difference?
Yes. Big
really?
Difference.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah.
I guess sometimes we just, you know, us that write English just don't, you know, get that, you know, we just don't understand it.
Yeah. You know, your guys' stuff is getting more colorful, you know.
Yeah, we are. We're getting more blingy, and that comes directly off of the Western side.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
especially,
yeah,
you know, who started that was really the Hunter Jumpers. Started
really?
Wearing blingy belts and, you know, belt buckles, which had never happened before. And then, you know, so they started, you know, getting them as fashion accessories, which never happened before. And then the dressage riders have slowly gotten over. And I think, you know, we went to Jennifer showed this last weekend in a Western dressage and a trail class. And there were a lot of English riders there. I think we're seeing a lot of crossover now, thanks to these new disciplines that are popping up.
Well, in Western dressage, you know, of the two Western-y dressage disciplines out there, Western dressage, I think, has a lot more in common with, you know, with the traditional dressage. So I can see how folks would kind of, you know, do both disciplines. And, well, I remember coming up when I was showing, like, in Western Pleasure and stuff, you would see the weird hybrid of the person who's showing quarter horses in both English and Western. So they're wearing their tall boots and their breeches around with their giant Western blingy belt buckle. We used to call them Winglish.
Winglish?
Western and English, yeah.
Write that down, Jennifer. Add that to our list of of made-up stuff. Winglish.
Yeah. Winglish.
There were some Winglish at this show last weekend. You know, there were a lot of English riders that were just in their English riding outfits, you know. And I think what it is Western dressage is so new. There, you know, they want to be inclusive to everybody, and they really haven't made those exclusionary rules about clothing yet, that you always end up 10 years from now, they'll be there, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, you'll have to wear this, and it'll only be proper if you wear that, or George Morris is going to get mad at you. So, you know, it's that thing. We're at that point where it's so new, everybody can wear anything. So it was kind of a different thing to see, you know, these Western riders in their complete English outfit look like they're going to a hunter show. And then all the way over to the Western riders in their $300 shirts, you know, so it was, you know, a whole different spectrum. And you probably see that a little bit at the NFR too, because everybody goes to the NFR, you know, in Crowboy Christmas. So,
oh yeah.
Yeah. You have a lot of the non-horsey fakers too, with the fake cowboy boots and, you know, all of that. And
we have that. Yeah. We have, you can kind of spot right off the bat who's, you know, who's the real deal and who's, wearing like a Toby Keith hat or what I call like the sorority girl going out to the line dancing night hat.
And or other place.
Yes. So you got a few of that out there. And then you have the guy who I'm pretty sure is not in the NFR. Yeah, he's wearing spurs all over the place.
Yes. Like, and they're not dirty. Spurs? And they're not rusty. You know a true cowboy by the amount of rust on the spurs.
Yeah,
that's true. And I saw you in a picture in a limousine.
Yes, that was, well, we were spotted from a mile away. We were waiting for, we're coming out of one of the convention centers and waiting for taxis. And of course, as soon as we get in line, all the taxis disappear and this limo comes up and he says, you know, oh, I'll take you where you want to go. And he gave us one prize and we're like, no, we're not doing that. And he kept going down. Finally, we're like, what the heck? Let's do it. Apparently, it was the only stretched BMW in Vegas.
Oh really?
that's what he said.
Did you get drunk in the limousine on the way to the hotel?
No. You know, they had cup holders for the champagne and everything, but no, I couldn't champagne. Find the booze. I think you have to bring your own. And I was looking for the sunroof for the moonroof, so I could, you know, do the whole
stand up. Yeah.
Yeah, on the strip, but that wasn't available. It's probably a liability thing at this point.
You pay extra for that and then you didn't pay enough.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
You drew them down too far. All right, let's talk to our first guest who we love, love, love having on the show. Why don't you introduce her?
Okay. Well, we've got with us Dominique Ferrero, who is from Zebras R Us. So we're going to talk with her today about zebra training. How are you, Dominique?
I'm doing excellent. Thank you.
Hey, girl.
How are you, my friend?
Good. It's so good to talk to you again. It's been a while.
I know, but you know, thank goodness for Facebook. We can stalk each other secretly.
I know, and I do. I stalk you all the time secretly.
Same here.
When I have to confess, I have an ulterior motive because I have a fairly recent acquisition of my herd. I got a Z-Donk in March and
wow.
I'm discovering what you probably already know is they're a little different.
Yes. Did you get a good life insurance policy?
For her or the Z-Donk or both?
Her, whoever she was, get a good insurance policy on her.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, no, she's really, for the most part, she's nicer than I thought she would be because, you know, I was ready, you know, for whatever she had for me. And she's actually wonderful and sweet and she loves to eat out of your hand and easy to catch. Her back feet have never been trimmed in her life. So we're working on that. She is very kicky, but never directly at me. So that I do appreciate that. They're very different and, you know, I definitely admire you for working with them. You probably talked about this on the show before, but I would like to know, why zebras? What got you into zebras?
Well, I was the different kid. My mom raised me with horses and outdoors, animals and things like that. I wanted a zebra and that's what I was going to do. You know, like,
all the other girls were jealous. All the other girls were jealous you had a pony because they wanted a pony. And here you were, you had the pony and wanted a zebra.
Exactly. Yep. I always, set the bar pretty high. But, you know, like everyone else, I wanted a zebra. And it was just a goal. It was something that I was told I couldn't do. I could never do it. I had a teacher in high school tell me, oh, you'll never have a zebra. You know, it was an ad project and we had to make believe a career with animals. It was a project. And I said, I'm going to have zebras. And I was literally ridiculed and laughed at in the front of the class because I was this silly girl that was going to have zebras. And I can't wait for the day that I meet him and I get to shake his hand and tell him thank you, you know, because it just made that want stronger. And I'll never regret anything, you know, for wanting them and getting them and keeping them in my life. They're amazing, amazing animals. They're very, very different.
Well, I tell you what, I totally feel you because I know what it's like to be growing up in school and being the weird horse girl. I can only imagine what it's like to be the zebra girl. But, you know, you get the people who are like, oh, you're talking about horses again. Or when you're doing your class projects, I was the one who, you know, a history lesson. Let's do the history of horses. Oh, I have to do an art project. It's going to be a horse, you know. And even in college, I majored in art. And every time the professor wanted us to do, you know, I want you to paint something in the style of Mondrian, I'm like, Mondrian horse. And yeah, he told me I was a little juvenile. And because I have to tell you this, he wanted us to make this sculpture. And I thought, you know, can I do something out of pipe cleaners? And he thought, that's really silly. And I made this giant 4-foot pipe cleaner horse, and it was actually ended up being entered in a student art show. So
wow,
yeah,
we
can all feel you on a different level, not quite on the zebra level, but those of us that have grown up being the crazy horse people in school, you know, you do get a little bit of interesting comments on that. And Well, I was looking on Facebook a couple weeks ago, there was a really cool story about, well, Z-Donks have been showing up a lot in the media lately. And maybe this is just because I own a Z-Donk now and I'm paying more attention, but they even had an interview with Rainn Wilson, who's the star of The Office. And I believe he has one of your Z-Donks. Is that correct?
Yes, he does. That family is just amazing. They're wonderful. And, you know, we wanted to talk a little bit about training and the fundamentals of zebras and the crosses. And I will tell you what, and I hope this gives you motivation. I get dozens of calls for people that want zebras and Z-Donks and anything that can spin off and be different. And this family called me. Everybody's just a person in my eyes, you know. It doesn't matter how much or what you do, as long as you have the right heart and, you know, the ability to take care of the animal. So they passed all my tests, and, you know, they're just a nice, loving family. They said, we want to love an animal. We want it to be different. We're a little different. We want an animal. And so I have different foals. I have some adults. I have different options for people. And you know what I tell people, and this is the honest to God truth. If you want this animal because you want to love something and you want to care for it, and you don't have any expectations for it, if you have a pasture that you can look out in and see your zebra or your Z-Donk grazing in, and you throw a carrot over the fence and it eats it and that brings you joy, you will be a great owner. Because if you get your animal today and it's halter broke and it does good, you know, and it's great for 2 days, 2 years, you know, 10 years. That's awesome. But I need you to know at the end of the day, if you cannot halter it or do anything with it, I want you to be satisfied. Because a lot of my clients excel without the expectation of, I'm going to ride mine. I'm going to take it in a show. I'm going to do this. They just genuinely have the passion in their heart, and they do amazing with these animals. And so Rainn and his wife just wanted to love an animal. And I mean, they have done the best job I've seen, you know, out of everybody. They just literally, all they know is to feed it, walk down there to its barn. They put a halter on it like normal, and they take it for walks. They take it to the park. They stop at a stop sign. I mean, they're just the real person that buys a pony. You know, they just love their animal. They're willing to learn, and they want the best for it, and they don't mistreat it. They don't have an expectation. And so, you know, they think it needs to pick up its feet. So they lean into its shoulder, and it picks up a leg, and they pet it. And they put it down and give it a carrot. And the relationship they've established is just beautiful. It's wonderful. And that's how I believe you excel with these zebras and zedongs, is you can't go in with an expectation. I'm going to ride it. I'm going to drive it. I'm going to do this and that. That doesn't work, because at the end of the day, you might be disappointed. The animal's disappointed, and it's not a great relationship. But if you go in saying, I love you. I want to pet you. I want to give you carrots today, and I want you to be fat and poop orange because I gave you so many treats. Like, it sounds like the bad spoiled pony thing, but they're just like cats. And, you know, our horses are like dogs. If our cat wants attention and love, love it. Take advantage of it. But when your cat doesn't want attention and crawls under the couch and you pull it out, you're going to have a very angry cat. So the horse, you know, you can halter it. We can do crazy things to our horses, and the next day it'll whinny to you, you know? So they're very cat-like in their personalities, but that family has just done such a great job, and it's all been out of love. It's never been out of a forced training method or, you know, you're going to do this now. It's all just been sweet and kind, and those are the best people that excel with these animals, is just the nice people.
Well, to follow up on Mary's situation a little bit, I have met her Zedunk, and it's so cute. What training method do you have to do with them to be able to accomplish things like you know Sammy Joe, and what she does with her zebras is incredible, right? So what do you have to do to get to that point?
Well, unfortunately, a lot of times we get different breeders that breed for money. They just breed them. And so they get these babies and they streamline them. And I don't know where your Zedonk came from, but typically it didn't start out in the right hands. It wasn't with a careful breeder, and they're forced. They're in a pasture. They get thrown around. They get a halter thrown on them and drug to a trailer, drug to an auction, drug here. And so they've never had a great relationship. So you are fighting a battle that's already against you. Like, in her mindset, people have already been bad. And so you have to establish that we're not bad, that we love you and it's okay. And their flight instinct becomes stronger than one that hasn't been messed with. It's kind of like the Mustangs. Like, you could give me a horse that's born in a barn and imprinted and worked with every day, or you could give me a 3-year-old Mustang stud that's never seen people. I'd take the 3-year-old Mustang. Because they haven't been hindered by humans. And so your girl, you have a lot of work ahead of you. You know, I'm sure she does the, I'm going to eat, touch you, and then head shake and kind of turn her away kind of thing. You know, and they do the little step backwards kind of silly. She has learned, if this is her, you know, she's learned that this is what we do, and I still get fed. So they're extremely smart in their tactical instincts of manipulating us, and we conform to their behavior. But it's really just slow and trust, and it's not necessarily training. It's almost behavior where you are in with her and you want to be part of her. As far as, you know, if she had an itch, she's going to go up to her mate or a fence host and just kind of like agitate, and then itch against a post or her friend. And so you want to be the post or the friend. And, you know, you don't care that she pets you. Like, you pet her. And so it's kind of a high school game where the more you don't like her, the more she's going to want attention and wonder why. Because everyone who's seen her has always wanted her attention. And she's learned how to manipulate things. So what I do with a lot of the wild ones, or the ones that don't trust people, is it's a game. I mean, I'll go in their pasture, their paddock, round pen, box stall, whatever you have them in, and just not care if they touch me. don't care. 2-3 hours later, you know, I'm doing emails, talking on the phone, doing anything with my back to them because I don't care. And what happens is they get curious as to why you don't, you know, why don't you want my attention? So they get the little nose and they touch you and they walk away. They touch you and they walk away. And eventually they're like, oh, well, I want to be your friend. You're my only friend right now. And they start to join up in a different way than a horse would. And it takes a long time. And once they start that acceptance process, you still have to pretend like you don't care. But then it would be, I'd say, oh, my, I kind of itch. And I just kind of graze by them and just kind of touch them and I walk away. You know, they, I don't give them the, I want to scratch you, love you attention. It's more of, yeah, you're there. I need a scratch. And I just kind of rub my shoulder on them and kind of walk away. So it's very aloof. It's quick. And you have to be precise on the behavior part of it, you know, because once they touch you, you feel as if it's such an accomplishment. It's like, oh, good girl, good girl. Where it's like, we have to take a step back and say, okay, that's our mentality. We have to go into their mentality. So it's almost like you want to mock them, which they think is really funny, and you get very different results because no one's ever done this behavior with them, you know? It's a fun game. It's really different. And it's a challenge, but it's fun.
Yeah, you know, my experience, and luckily, you know, I don't think she had a good start in life. She was originally purchased at an exotic sale, and you know, she's got a little scarring on her nose where I think she had a halter that was too small. But the folks who had her before me did an amazing job, you know, getting her as friendly as she has gotten, which, judging by where she started, I'm actually very surprised that she's as wonderful as she is. But, you know, from what I can tell, it's very similar to working with mules and donkeys. And a lot of what you said totally makes sense in that, you know, the mule is the one animal where sometimes, no matter what's going on in the lesson, you have to just take a step back and say, okay, I will see you tomorrow. And if you've only been around horses, yeah, a lot of folks who've only done horses or have only done, you know, really gentle, easy horses, would get really frustrated and maybe even stubborn about it and say, no, you know, we have to end on a good note. And then you will end up in a losing game. And so, you know, sometimes, yeah, when you could feel you're pushing the bubble, you just take a step back and say, okay, well, I'll see you tomorrow. And you may go home and cry about it overnight. But then when you come back the next day, they're like, oh yeah, I know this. I've always known this. We're cool now. And, you know, very similar, like even my best show mule ever, Emmett, who's won tons of buckles, he would just have a class sometimes where he'd say, I'm not going in the arena and this isn't happening. And I'd have to be like, well, okay, we'll try later. And, you know, you feel like you're giving up ground, but sometimes you just, you know, that's just what you need to do to kind of salvage the relationship for that point. And, you know, it's really interesting. I've got a few donkeys on my place that started out feral, and they're the one animal I've had where I didn't have to actively go out and ramp in them and make them join up and flag them and all this. Yes. One day, all, you know, it's happened one by one with every one of my feral donkeys. One day they just walk up to you and they look at you and they say, you're cool. And from that moment, you can feed them, touch them, pick their feet. They're like, yeah, you know, I approve of you now.
Yes. And it's like a light bulb. I mean, they're so smart. And once you're in, it's ridiculous. It's like they're on top of you. You can't get away from them. And they love you. I mean, I've never felt the genuine love of, I have my long ears and my short ears. And I have one special horse, the horse of a lifetime. But, gosh, once those zebras and donkeys accept you, it's a different world. I mean, it's just so amazing once you're in. It's really, really, really something. I always joke, you know, when I get really, really old, I'm not going to be the crazy cat lady. I'm going to be the crazy donkey lady.
They are They're awesome. Yes, they're incredibly addictive. And, you know, as much as I've got the best quarter horse ever, Guthrie. As much as I love him, he's like a golden retriever. Anyone could come take him and he'd be like, okay, I love you too, you know? And yes. So I totally feel you on you know, when those long years
really...
Well,
speaking of which, you can just pack a little Rio up that's on your website and ship them here to Florida. Rio's a little adorable zonky colt. He's so...
Yeah.
Do you still have Rio, or did you sell him?
You know what? I am so guilty of this, but I hate to, I mean, I love to say it, but he is sold. Everything on our site is sold. And
really?
I can't update it quick enough. No, I can't update it quick enough to have, I've had two babies born in the last month and they're sold. I've got,
well, that's a good thing.
That's it's a... great. And but I feel bad. I'm like, I don't even update my website. I need to start doing that. I really do.
Well, Rio is so darn cute, and I hope Rio went to a good home. So,
Rio went to a great, great home, actually with a horse, a really great trainer up in Ohio. And she sends me pictures. I'll post something on your page later, but he's got Christmas ears on and, you know, just a great person got him and loves him and has an amazing relationship. And, you know, that's the thing, and I feel bad for the people that get these older Z-donks and crosses is because they don't get that great relationship, and I do not believe in bottle feeding and doing that. It's like a fake relationship. So when these animals are born and I just go in there and I love on their moms, and then they want to be curious and then they get loved on, they've never been mishandled. They've never been pushed around or bullied. Everything in their life has only been good with people. So when my clients get them, they get this little shining, amazing baby that just wants to be loved, that humans have never been mean to, and it just shines through, and they get awesome animals. They get really, really good animals after they've been here.
Yeah, I mean, they're really amazing animals, and you know, I have time for one more quick question. I wish we had more time because I'd love to pick your brain all day. But I'm looking on your website and I'm seeing that you do like photo shoots and film work with these animals. And, you know, we've just talked about how challenging they are. Talk to us a little bit about the challenges of getting one to perform on cue and on mark for a photo or video shoot.
Yeah, what we do on that, which is great, which goes back to the same Being Nice Foundation, is we make everything positive and fun and exciting. And so what happens is when we go on set, we typically take their friend. You know, I raise everything with something else, so they have a buddy. If we take their buddy, we take their friend, and it's all positive, positive, positive. So, you know, if they have to stand on the mark, what I do at home is... You know, from 4 feet away, I'm just like, oh, you're so cute. And I talk to him. I teach him to back with my body language. And, you know, so when you're on set, they've learned, oh, when mom turns her shoulder that way, we kind of go to the left. So on set, it's never a job. It's always what we've done at home. It's always been fun. It's always, ooh, I know if I scratch a little bottom here and you like it, you kind of stand there for a minute until I do it again. And so it's not a job. It's fun and scratches and massage, and so, you know, we kind of manipulate it to where it's fun. And every time any person that goes on set with animals, any animal wrangler, you know, preps the company and says, we're dealing with animals, we're going to do the best we can, but be forgiving. And I've never run into a bad, you know, production company. I've only had amazing people that are very accepting, and they deal with actors all day. And, you know, when they see an animal, it's almost like a relief from their daily job, and they love it. And people are kind, and it's just really a great thing, and it's fun, and the animals have a great time. You know, it's all good. And if you just keep everything positive with these animals, they love to work. They go somewhere. You know, at home we give them attention, but when they go on set, they've got 100 people, you know, wanting to pet them and love on them. I mean, they're laying down in their shavings in their little star capsule, and you've got people taking selfies, rubbing on them, going to the catering carts, bringing back carrots and apples, and who knows what else, pancakes. I had somebody try to feed my camel pancakes on set, which was pretty funny. So it's always been great. It's always been fun. It's not always about the money. It's just about keeping things great. And it shows through the animals.
You know, when we actually went out to see you when you were at your farm out in California, you were there was a photo shoot going on that day. We pulled in the driveway and there was a tent set up and all these trailers. And it was the most bizarre situation because we pull in and there's all these exotic animals everywhere. And there's Dominique and she's showing us around. And over on the other side of the farm where was this setup. I forget whether they're doing a commercial or a movie or something that day. But they had this tent set up and everybody, the suits, there were suits there. They were eating lunch. And everybody was eating lunch under this formal lunch under this tent at this farm in the middle of nowhere. It was the most bizarre scene. I got to tell you, it was just bizarre. I mean, all the suits there. And then they were shooting zebras that day, and they were just going around and around and around until they get the shot. And you said, I talked to you later after we left, and you said that shoot to get one shot took all day.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We have a job in L.A. that the zebra just has to be in the background. I mean, you know, if everything went right, it'd take 15 minutes, and it's a three-day shoot. So... you know, that's the thing is if you prep your company, it's an animal. And so you prep your company correct, then you have no problems, you know? So that shoot, I believe they wanted a zebra to be cantering on the left lead or loping.
That's right. It was on the right. It was on the correct lead. That's right. Yes.
Right. Yeah. That was for, I think that was a Parliament cigarette ad or something. And so we were going to green screen it in. And so all we did, we set up the arena. We had, I think there was five or six zebras in there.
Yep,
and
yep.
All we did was pretend like we were lunging at Liberty. And they just went around. And that was what we prepped the company for and said, this is what we're going to do. You might get it in 5 seconds. You might take it in 5 hours. And not that we would work the zebras in 5 hours, but it was like, okay, they worked well. They're tired. Let's
That's
go
okay. Those film guys weren't working 5 hours straight either.
Right. And it's just fun. It's just, it's always craziness, but the people definitely love the animals. So they always get a lot of attention.
Well, where can people find you?
The website is zebrasrus.com, and that's with a capital letter R. And, you know, Facebook's very popular, so Dominique Ferraro or zebrasrs.com. I'd love to talk to anybody that has questions and try to help anybody out.
And you're in Texas right now?
I am.
Okay.
I am. I'm so excited.
Well, you need to change your accent a tiny bit, and it'll let you stay. So, I'm just saying.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm talking to people, and they look at me, and they go, Where is your accent from? And I look at them like, I was saying the same thing about you.
Thank you, Dominique. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks for stopping
by. Yeah, take care. Have a great holiday.
All right, you Bye-bye. Too. Merry Christmas. She's always fun, isn't she? And she loves, loves, loves her animals. She really does.
I couldn't tell. I tell you what.
Yeah, with Dominique, you pretty much know what you get because you get what you get. And she's a sweetheart. I really do like
her. Yeah, I tell you what, it's always validating. You know, we talk to a lot of trainers you know, when you're learning from trainers, and a lot of them will tell you, oh, don't pet on him or don't let him pet on you and you disrespect and blah, blah, blah. It's always nice to have a seasoned trainer say, no, you know, work from love and love on them and feed them. And so always a nice feeling.
And that's the way she does. She truly does. I mean, that's, that, you know, she wasn't just saying all that. We've seen her in action and
yeah.
You know, her animals are all that way too. She has some, apparently she sold most of them. So, we all wish we had her business. But
exactly.
You know what? She cares about her animals and she knows that these are dangerous wild animals too. You know, zebras can hurt you and can hurt you bad. And she realizes that. And that's why she said she always makes sure they go to a house that understands that are willing to accept the fact that they're dealing with a wild animal. And she's very, you have to be,
they are different and they are masters of saving themselves from pressure. So they will do what it takes to escape. And if they don't have the option of escape, they will revert to that fight mode. And they're very, you know, because it's, you know, they've got that wild instinct, they're masters at it. So yeah, you definitely have to be careful.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like they're trying to rip your throat out for pleasure. They're doing it because they view it as a way to survive. It's yours or theirs, right? So, you know,
no one's told them we're not still in the wild. So they're doing what they need to do to take care of themselves. And the wonderful thing about that, you know, mules really have a strong instinct for that too. And it can work against you if you're not careful. But I always trust a mule, especially riding on really bad trails, because if they're going to take care of themselves that well, then they're going to take care of me by proxy. You know, so they can be wonderful animals once you get bonded with them.
Well, of course, we're listening to the Mary Kitzmiller episode here on the second Thursday of every month. Mary is in Las Vegas, and we just spoke to Dominique Ferrero of Zebras R Us, and now we're going to speak to somebody who really doesn't need much introduction. But before we do, I have a couple birthdays for our listeners. Dr. Ellen in New York, it's her birthday, and she's probably listening in, so happy birthday, Dr. Ellen. We hope you have a wonderful day there in Manhattan. And then also Susan Nelson. It's her birthday as well. So happy birthday to you, Susan. And you want to introduce our next guest? As I said, like he needs any?
Yes, I'm really excited to announce we have Guy McLean with us all the way from Australia.
So how are you today, Guy?
I'm going really good, Mary. Great to be able to talk to you again.
Wonderful. And so you're in Australia. Tell me, are you home for the holidays or are you doing any work while you're down there?
We've been doing some work. We came over here for something we have to be rather quiet about, and hopefully we'll be able to tell people about that in January. But come home. I've got 30 horses based over here in Australia, and as well as my 11 horses in America. So I come home and I get to handle my foals and run my hands over my wonderful horses like Nugget and Bargo that started my career out. So it's great to come home. I say that America is where you chase the dream and try and get a big name and do all the shows. And Australia is where I come back and get back to my roots and back to where I started as a horseman. So to be home at Nugget's Rest and then to be able to see my father every day and my daughter, it's been a blessing to be home for a little while.
Oh, wonderful. Well, we may have to have you back in January if you care to break your big news on the show. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, it's always, that would be great. It's got to keep it fairly quiet at the moment, but we're looking forward to being back in America in late January and then starting performing over there again, which will be great. We've been so well received over there, and we thank you for your wonderful country for welcoming us in like you have.
I'm picturing James Bond, you know, the secret mission he's on, and he's got the car with all the gadgets. That's what I'm picturing.
Well, you're picturing wrong, but you enjoy that.
We know they're looking to recast Bond, so it could be that. Yeah.
We never had a Bond with an Aussie accent. That'd be perfect. Yeah. And he knows how to use a whip. We can add all kinds of new things into it.
Golly. Yeah. This interview is taking a turn.
It always does. It always does.
Yeah, we never stay on track. So, speaking of cool performances, I'm over at the NFR this year. And if I'm not mistaken, you've done the NFR in the past too. Is that correct?
We're very blessed to be a part of the pre-fit activation out of the Thomas and Mack Centre. And we did that for 4 years in a row, as well as performing in Mandalay Bay and at the Cowboy Christmas at the Convention Centre. So, yeah, it's been fantastic. And in the past, we do over 40 performances over the 10 days and travel back and forth. It's funny, people say, wow, you perform a lot. So you spend more time driving. It's incredible to get in the vehicle over at the Orleans, and then you can see the Thomas and Mack Centre, and 3 hours later, you finally get to it. It's a lot of travelling in that heavy traffic, but I'd love to be there, but I'm sure my horses are glad that they're not traveling back and forth between all those jobs.
Oh my gosh, yeah. This is my first time out here, and it is just like you said. You see where you're supposed to go, and you think, oh, it's just like 100 yards away, and 4 hours later, you finally make it.
It's an amazing week. Las Vegas is one of those places you're so excited to get in there, and 10 days later, you're pretty excited to get out. But it's a fantastic place, that's for sure.
That's the best description of Vegas I've heard yet. And I went there for two conferences 2 weeks in a row, and I was never so happy to not to stop hearing ding, 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 ding in my sleep. You know.
So you've performed at some really cool venues. Do you have a favorite one?
Everywhere we go, everywhere that people want to see us is always wonderful. You know, the World Equestrian Games in 2010 was great. There was a a real breakout for us. It's just like you were saying before, people were saying, come and see this guy from Australia, and they'd say, what's his name? And they'd say, well, we don't know, but just come and see this guy from Australia. So we performed, we did over 1,000 miles over those 10 days at the World Equestrian Games, and we travelled between three venues just trying to get our name out, trying to allow people to see my wonderful horses. And the four horses I had with me were all from Australia, so they were... Everyone likes an international thing. I know that Australia gets excited when they see horses imported from overseas, so that my horses became pretty big over there, and that was a big time for us. It's where we met Prefect Rodeo and Ranch Equipment and started their relationship with them. And so that will always be a big memory for me. But I love our shows back here in Australia too. My favourite show in Australia is called the Brisbane Echo, and that's Australia's second biggest royal agricultural show. Nugget and I, my wonderful stallion, used to perform in front of 20,000 people on a nightly occasion, and we'd be cantering around the arena and they'd all be shouting out the star's name, and it was always Nugget, it was never me, and I was just happy with that. So, you know, Canada, America, Australia, I hope to get into Europe. But basically, anywhere we go that people want to see these amazing animals, anywhere that they go and can see that the companionship and trust and belief that can be held between two totally separate beings is very big for me. And my next show is the one I'm always the most excited about getting to.
Well, and I think that's something that's pretty unique to your act is, you know, you really let the audience know, get to know your horses through your act, and that they all have different personalities and they have different talents. So when you're looking for a horse to add to your team, is there anything in particular you look for?
In the beginning, any horse was just the best. Like my wonderful stallion Nugget has been given a tribute in one of our best magazines over here, and the lady said, he made you, he was special, you were lucky to have him. And I said, I absolutely was. I said, but if it wasn't him, it would have been another horse. I was always going to try and bring out the very best in the individual, but it was that horse that did it for me. So he is special, and there will never be another one like him. But what I look for in horses now is for those extreme athletes, those ones that may slip through the cracks in other training methods, horses that may be a little bit too much or a little bit too quirky. They're the ones that I love the most. My Spin Abbey in America that I think is the most incredible horse I've ever ridden. In a lot of people's hands, he would be dangerous. He sees life totally different. A whisper to him is like a gunshot to another horse. And then I just love that when I breathe in and out, he just is with me in every step and every moment. And you don't have time. People say, what are you accused with him? And I say, well, I don't have time to cue. I only have time to think. And so I absolutely love that with him. And I look for horses like that. When I'm 70 and 80, I'll probably look for horses like Nate and Ozzie that I rode to the horse, because they are grandpa horses. I love them to death. But it's the Spin Abbeys, the ones that are just like riding a ball of energy. They're the ones that I love the most. And they're the most difficult to train, and they certainly make me be more horsemen, but I love that too. I love that every new horse looks at me and says, I don't care where you've been and what you've done, I only care who you are in the moment. And those horses that make me be at my very best, they're the ones that I really appreciate the most.
It kind of reminds me, there's a saying floating around Facebook, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was sort of along the lines about great horses being, they're very, you know, they can be difficult because they've got, you know, quirky personalities and you know, kind of bigger egos and you know, those things that might be hard for other people to work with is exactly what makes them great and legendary horses. So yeah, I can definitely. My favorite guy is that I have that I'm working with, he's a sixes colt, and I think he might be related to one of yours actually. And he's definitely the opposite. He's gonna take grandma on a trail ride and no problem. And that's kind of my speed. That's what I like.
you're talking yourself down. You're a hell of a horsewoman. You do a fantastic job. And Guthrie is a star. I love seeing what you're doing with him. You're doing a fantastic job with him, Mary.
Thanks. I always have to have the bag of cookies. Otherwise, he doesn't do it now.
I wonder why you're so fat and shiny.
Yeah. Yeah, my vet chastised me the other day. He said rainwater's going to puddle on his back. So I might have to actually make him work for maybe carrots instead of cookies this time.
There you go.
Yeah. So your team obviously is become very well seasoned, and they've been all over the world. So when you train them now and you get ready for a show, do you have to do a lot of work at home, or is it pretty much just keeping them legged up? Do they have it all down, or how much time do you have to dedicate to getting them ready for each show?
Great question. And it all depends. Each one of my teams is different. I have the Australian team that I took over there. I'll go back to them and I'll have 3 days, three short sessions, and they'll be right to go. I'll have to probably body clip them and make sure they look pretty, because Nate Prefet looks after them for me. He goes, they're getting pretty ugly looking. They're getting hairy. I tell him not to do anything with them. I tell him just to feed them and look after them, which he does an amazing job. So I get back and they look real happy. And you know, Mary, that if the horses are educated well, a break for them is just awesome. I climb back on them and they are more alive and more open to anything that you ask. And I find that when I do a tour over here in Australia and I go really hard and I run down the road, that I get quite tired and my horses get to where they've had enough of it as well, 2 or 3 months on the road, and they've done a lot of miles. So I put them to rest and I say, I'll see you soon, team, and my wonderful family and friends look after them here. And then I fly back to a team over in America that hasn't been touched for 3 or 4 months, and their energy and their life and they're excited to get back into it just lifts me again. So I'm very blessed now that I have 3 teams of 4 throughout 2 different countries. And whenever I go back, it's their energy gets me up. So I'm just so excited about that. But the ones that are educated and know their job, 2 or 3 sessions, and the 2 or 3 sessions are really only for me and you know, to know for sure that they're going to be okay and be able to do the 3 and 4 demos shows they need to do. But I could go back and people could come and watch me in the first 20 minutes after 8 months off, and they would put on a show every bit as good as they did before. They're the most amazing creatures in the world, and I'm just so blessed to be able to share them with everyone, because the things that they've shown me and everything that I am, I'd be nothing without them. And to think that they can go 8 to 10 months, that the Australian horses will go that long, and 3 days later I'm at a major show and they're doing amazing things. The horses that I have, the stock horses, they keep themselves fairly fit. They gallop around a lot. The 4/6 boys and little Benny and that, they like to sleep, and I do have to put them on the treadmill a little bit to make them look right. But the others, I come back and people think for sure, everyone thinks that I've got workers that are riding them every day. They look that fit. So I'm very lucky that they keep themselves fit while I'm away.
Well, you know, that's something that I'm not sure is really talked about enough in training. You know, we talk about letting a horse soak, but people think, you know, oh yeah, give him a 5-minute break during the ride and that's soak time. But, you know, I had the privilege of riding with some guys who, you know, they kind of do the buckaroo outfits up north. And those are the kind of guys, they put 5 rides on a colt, kick them back up into the mountains, and then they bring them back. And they always told me, you know, if you leave them on a good note, when they come back, it's not like they only had 5 rides. It's almost, you know, it just kind of, that knowledge just worked into their brain and they come back better than they ever were. And of course they're older now and more mature. And I think, you know, I think a performance horse program based on that idea of, you know, put a little bit in their mind and then kick them out. And, you know, I think that's a really great way to train horses if you have the time and, you know, to be able to do it.
Yeah, well, I'm in a position that I don't have the time not to. Like, I have so little time with them between the 3 countries that most of the time I'm training, people say, can we watch you train? And I say, well, if you come to the event, you'll get to watch me train, because if I have a young one, that's the only time I get to, is in the warm-up arenas at the major shows, or even in the shows I'm working on a young one, getting them right. But I think people say, I can't believe that you can leave your horses 8 months and come back and they be like that. Why are they so good? And I said, and this is, it'll sound funny, but it's the absolute truth. It's as though they look at each other and say, now, what did we do last time that he gave us a 6-month break? I remember I laid down, you 3 side passed over the top of him, we rubbed our heads, and then he went away and we had 8 months off. Let's do that again. It's as though they're saying, if we go and do all those wonderful things that he did that we did before, we get the consequences that we have now. And horses are always, you know, people think that my horses do everything for me because they love me, and I hope they do. I hope in my heart that they look at me like I look at them. But I believe that the reason they do what they do is because they're looking after them first. If we do these things, good things come. And so I can leave my horses 8 to 10 months and I come back to them and they say, let's do all the things we did before we had the big break, and we might get a big break again.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's why you probably shouldn't let them buck you off and then turn them out for 8 months, which...
No, don't do that.
Yeah, I've seen some of those. I actually had a clinic this spring where that happened. A person fell off and then didn't ride for 4 months and then wondered why...
That's what I've been doing wrong.
Oh, my gosh. Please don't do that. Hire someone to get on your horse. Yeah.
Absolutely.
But yeah. They really are amazing creatures at understanding, you know, patterns and routines and what gets them, you know, relief and comfort. So, you know, your training program for those, you know, who might not have seen it yet, though I do imagine that's pretty hard to imagine. It is really different. And that's one of the first things I noticed when I think the first time I saw you was at the America's Favorite Trail Horse Competition. I think that was back in 2010.
I remember that.
Yeah.
With your beautiful mule.
I had the mule, old Emmett.
Yeah.
And but I noticed your program is really different. It's one of the more original programs I've seen out there. You know, there's so many great trainers that are kind of out on the market now, and a lot of, you know, you could kind of group them into guys, you know, that train in this way, and you could see a lot of similar methods, but yours was really quite different, and I found that really interesting. Is that stuff that you taught yourself, or did you have any mentor coming up and learning?
It was really the horses. My dad said to me when we were little kids, I'm the youngest of five boys, and dad has a riding, like a dude ranch, I suppose you'd call it in America, where we have 50 guest horses, and as we grew up and we left school, it was our job. The first job we did when we left school was to take the rides and take care of the 50 horses. And so my dad said to us when we were young, he said, kids, I know nothing about horses. I'm a footballer and we bought these horses and we're going to do the best by them. He says, but as long as you don't hurt yourselves, and you don't hurt the ponies, you can do whatever you like. So I grew up trying to ride horses riderless and saddleless before I knew that anyone else was doing it. By the time I was 21, I was getting compared to the big names now that I get to ride beside. And I was just doing my very best to try and get the wonderful things that I saw them do in the paddock. I look at a horse in the paddock and I think he's perfect. I think that God has made the most amazing animal and we are so blessed to be able to spend time with him. So I look at it and I say, I don't want you to be anything but the very best that you are. I don't want you to be a mirror image of any other horse that I've had. I just want you to be the very best version of you. And so when I start working with them, I'm just looking for them to be able to give all that ability that they have naturally to give it over to me. And so from the time I was 15, I was starting them bridleless and saddleless on their first ride and holding onto their manes and just traveling around with them. And now my method is I ask a lot more and I ride them on the first day out in the open and that kind of thing. But in the beginning, I was just doing my very best to allow them to be who they are, because as the youngest of five boys, I was nothing like my brothers. My brothers were a lot more confident. They were a lot more stylish in a lot of different ways. I was the awkward kid that my mum and dad said to themselves, I hope little guy will be okay. And now I say at main arenas around the world, little guy is doing just fine. He's chasing his dream. And I thank you for everything they did for me. But it was the horses that allowed me to be who I am. When I talk of Nugget, when I talk of Navajo and Nancy and Sonny, they were my best teachers, because I would ask them questions and they would tell me definitively yes or no whether I was on the right track. And I wasn't doing anything because it was a fad or doing it because someone was winning a ribbon doing it. I was doing it because it made a difference to the way the horses saw me. And I always saw the perfect mirror was my horse's eye. The way he looked back at me was how I envisioned myself. And so it wasn't what people said about me, because what people can say that you can be quite harsh. When a horse looks at you, he doesn't look at you for any other reason than to see you for all that you are. And so for the first 20 years, it was just me learning from them. And then I'd go to major shows and I'd get to ride beside Anki van Gunten and beside wonderful people like Craig Johnson and John Lyons and Monty Roberts. All those fellows would come over to a big show in Australia called Equitana. And I remember riding Nugget out, bridleless and saddleless. He was a four-year-old. And all I was thinking to myself is, mate, this is the big time. These are big names. I've read about them in a magazine. You'd be a good boy. And he was just a star. And so it's always been the horses. I've always obviously need to be a teacher for them, because they don't have big desires like we do. So for my horses to go and do special things, it's really because of my asking. But the way that I ask them to do it is in a way that benefits them the most, because I just want them. I don't ever want to look out upon them in the paddock and say that you're not as beautiful as you was before I started with you. I want my horses to shine from the inside out
and to say, look what we can do together. So I'm very open-minded and try to do anything. If I see something that's great, I try to add it. It's always been the horses. They've always been my biggest inspiration and my best teachers.
You know, I think you brought up some amazing points there, and, you know, one of them being that, I think there's some rhetoric out there where we're trying to train X trait out of a horse. You know, we're going to try to train the prey animal out of him, or we're going to try to train the spook out of him, or train the, you know, and really, you know, I totally agree with you. They're perfectly built for the jobs that you know, we right. want them to do. And you know, there's not a better animal you could ask for to do those things. And then instead of looking at the horse and thinking, you know, I gotta kick all of this out of you. I've gotta erase this and add my stuff. And the more I learn, the more I realize that's just not true. And, you know, I think another really good trainer put it, you know, when you look at the horse out in the pasture, they do everything that we could ever ask them to do already in nature. You know, I've seen them do tempi lead changes every stride. I've seen them do airs above the ground and I've seen them spin and roll back and slide. And so, you know, the only trick is to figure out how to make that happen, you know, in sync with when, you know, with what we want to do. And, you know, so I think that's a wonderful point you've brought up. And then, you know, also, we live in an age when there's so many wonderful clinicians out there, and there's so much information and so many books, and it's sort of easy to get bogged down or get stalled out on trying something because you're afraid, you know, oh, well, my DVDs ran out, so I don't know what to do now. You know, a lot of times if you just go out there and start fiddling with them, you know, they'll tell you, you're exactly right. They'll tell you what you're doing that's right and what you're doing that's wrong, or what's too harsh or what's not enough. And the wonderful thing about them is they're very forgiving. So they're going to forgive you if you, you know, as long as you're trying to be as fair as you can.
They are so amazing. Nugget was my guinea pig. He was my everything. The first horse I ever rode bridleless and saddleless with the tarp over his head. The first horse I ever side passed over the top of. He was the horse that did it. And I remember side passing. I used to work two stands together, and I used to jump one horse over the top of the other. And when he would get up, it could be quite dangerous. So I said, I'm not going to do that to you anymore. I never want the glory to be, I never want the payout, you know, to be as bad as if it went bad. I want it to always be safe. So I remember laying Nugget down and saying, I'm going to side pass and see if I can side pass over you. I'd never seen anybody do that before. And so I got halfway over, and Nugget was just beautiful. He just stayed. He was only a 5-year-old. And I thought, can I go further? And he sat up like a dog. He said, no, that's fair enough. So that's all you ever used to do, is go halfway over and halfway off. And then one of his sons, Hope, that's in America now, he let me go all the way. And then now I've got 12 horses worldwide that allowed me to do it. But I was always making sure that it was their decision and that they wanted to do things. And most of the stuff in my shows, people say, how did you come up with that? Like, I asked Hope to side pass over and step over the horse on the ground with me. And he started to do a lap of honour about 8 years ago. He'd walk around, he'd smell the ground, he'd look at the crowd, and he'd take 30, 40 seconds to come to me. And I say, every great number one deserves his lap of honour. And that wasn't something I taught him. It was something he just did. I remember Pride, I called her on to side pass over, and instead of side passing over, she just walked straight to my side and clambered all over the top of her brother. She didn't touch him, but she stepped over him like he was a stool. These are parts of the act now that I keep in my show and make my show. And I didn't do them. It was my horses. They'd come and said, I think this will look good, Dad. Got a gelding here in Australia that he cracks funnies all the time. Every time I lay him down, he pokes his tongue out at the audience. You know, the greatest parts about my show as a performer, that they were things that my horses brought. It was not something I said, you're going to do this. So I say to them, here are the lines, but I want you to ad-lib. And they, that is what's so wonderful about them, is that they are allowed to be the great personalities that we see. The saddest thing for me is when I see a horse lose everything that he is and not be able to show that, because that's what I fell in love with in the first place. When I saw Nugget as a 16-month-old, I loved him then. Now I love him more now because of what we shared together. But I think the big thing for us to realise is they're an amazing creature already, and we need to see them as that and let them shine, because there's only one individual, just like there's only one you and I. And if we can all be the best version of ourselves, the world will be a great place.
Yeah, I totally agree. And again, I think that's what's wonderful and unique about your shows. Well, I could probably go on for another few hours because this has been just really wonderful and interesting. But we have to wrap. So where can people find you? What's next? What's your next stop in America or elsewhere?
Thank you for asking. Our next big stop is Horse World Expo. And you know, Mary, that a lot of the great shows in America will use you once or twice and then say, you were truly fantastic. We'll see you in a couple of years' time. Horse World Expo in Harrisburg, PA, they've had me now for, I think this will be my sixth or seventh year. And it's wonderful to keep going back to those places. And for you feel like you have family. The fans come up and hug you and say, it's great to see you back. So I'm really excited to do that. Then we're going to be at Madison, Wisconsin, in April, and then we'll be turning around and coming back and doing shows here in Australia. But please keep in touch with us on Facebook, and I look forward to taking you all around the world with us. And Mary, I've watched you grow as a horsewoman and as a personality. I'm very proud of you. You're doing a wonderful job.
Oh, well, thank you. That's, I can't tell you how amazing that is to hear, and you're probably not going to be seeing me blush like crazy, but that's just going to make my week, I tell you what, or my year, actually.
That's lovely. Thank you so much for having us on the show, and
thanks,
I can't
guy.
Wait to see you both somewhere down the road. Thanks, friend.
All right, take care.
Thank you.
Well, that should have made your day.
Yeah, just a little bit. Just a little bit. That's always nice to hear.
He has an amazing memory. He remembers everything. He remembered the mule. He remembered, he just remembers this stuff. And, you always get the impression with Guy that he's going through life just enjoying every day,
Yeah. And I think it's very genuine. And the remembering details like that, I tell you what, if you're ever looking for good advice to succeed in business and in life, things like that, that's a really good characteristic for a person to have. And of course, it means the world to the people they're talking with, because that conversation meant the world to me for sure.
Well, it was excellent. You did a great job. Your interviewing skills are just improving every month. And, because it comes natural to you, and I think that's part of why I like working with you, is it really does come natural, and people like you. So it makes it easy for a person like Guy who sometimes, is distracted and, he's got a lot going on in his life, but you caught him at a good time and did a great job. So.
Oh, well, thank you.
So there's your second compliment of the day.
This is a great
day for me. Go play the slot machine now. You're liable to win $1 million.
Yes, yes. I'm gonna...
You know what Jennifer always won at? She never played for long. She'd always just do $1 bill or $2, $5, whatever it cost, is the big slot machine at the end, the one that's like 10 feet tall with the great big handle. If you see one of those, put like $5 in it and see what you come out with. She always wanted those things.
Wow. Well, the one that I was really liking in the beginning is this goldfish game. And I won a lot in the beginning. And then they've got my number because now it's just not.
Are you going to be able to get home? That's just, do I need to wire you some money?
I'm probably going to have to hitchhike or ride some train cars.
Well, thank you so much, Mary, for taking the time out of your morning to come to us from Las Vegas. We really appreciate it. Wave to some cowboys for us over the next day or two. And I hope you do get to the rodeo tonight.
Yeah. Yeah. Eventually I'll make it there. I promise.
And I do like your new hat. It's very cool.
Oh, thank you.
Good job. I have to go get one, too. I'm doing an event in February where all the podcasters know me for my cowboy hat, even though I'm a fake cowboy. But they don't know that, right? Because I do the horse podcast. So as far as they're concerned, I'm a cowboy. So I always wear my cowboy hat because I'm the only one, right? So I stand out. But now I need two. It's a multi-day event, and I only have one. So I got to go shopping.
Yes.
What color should I get, Mary? Because I don't know.
Ooh.
I already have the kind of whitish one. I got a Wrangler one that's kind of whitish, and it's the hard one. So I don't know what's going to be February. I don't know what I should do about my styles, I don't know.
Well, you can never go wrong with felt. And, I guess now you can wear felt all year round. It used to be straw in the summer, felt in the winter, also still works.
But should I get brown or black? Black's kind of, I grew up in Amish country, so I never wanted to wear black anything, right? Because when you grew up in Amish country, you didn't wear black. So I kind of have this thing against black. So I'm kind of thinking I have to go brown.
Yeah, I would. A brown would be really nice. And, you know, there's so many different choices. You never know until you put the thing on your head.
That is true. My brothers and I, we all meet every couple of years for a reunion, right? And the families come. And last time we did it in Nashville, none of us had been to Nashville before. And we had the greatest week ever, by the way. And one of the afternoons we spent, we just went to a cowboy hat store, one of the real ones there in Nashville. And we spent 4 hours in there, and every one of us walked out with a cowboy hat. But you're right. You just have to try them on and try them on. And you'd look at a person, you know, instantly whether it works or not.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Definitely do that. And then, you know, while you're at it, you know, why stop at cowboy hat? You need to get some tall top boots.
Oh, you know, I've tried the boots. How do you people wear those boots? They're so uncomfortable.
I love them.
They are so uncomfortable. How do you do it?
You know, well, Twisted X, which is one of my sponsors, those are wonderful boots that you don't have to break in. And, so I always make sure I really make sure I get my sizing right, because you'll know after a few hours walking around whether that boot fits or not. But no, I really like them, and I like my tall tops. You know, I've really gotten accustomed to those. I really like riding in them. My jeans don't get dirty, and my boots don't get caught up in my fenders. So
are they supposed to be tucked in or not?
Yeah, it depends on what part of the country you're in.
Okay, so that's a country thing too, where you're at. It's a geography thing.
Yeah, or whether you're punchy enough to pull it off. You know, I don't know if I am or not, but I'm doing it anyway.
So you tuck them in just because you're cool?
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
I'm too cool for school.
Hey, it's Really Bad Ads tomorrow, and we also have to mention your store. So let's mention that first.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so we are still running our Cyber Monday-esque sale.
Because she's been in Vegas, I can't figure out how to take it down from there.
Yeah. I take advantage of my lack of technological prowess, and we have 20% off of everything online, and it's going to run for 5 more days. So it'll go till the 15th, order by the 15th, and we will do our very best to get to you in time for Christmas. Shouldn't be a problem unless you're in Siberia. And so we've got some cool stuff on there. We've got saddle blankets, we've got jewelry, we've got clickers, we've got DVDs, all 20% off.
Very good. So head on over to Mary's store at marykitzmiller.com and click on the store link. That's where you can find that. Tomorrow on Really Bad Ads, we only have 2 more Really Bad Ads for the year. And that means that next week, next Friday, we're going to be drawing for everybody that has submitted an ad this year is going to be put into a pot. We're going to pick a name out, and that person is going to win the Equity Shake and Fork worth $300. So all year long, people have been trying with Really Bad Ads to win the weekly prize, and now you get the chance. You're definitely going to want to hop on and send those ads in. Hop onto Craigslist and find those bad ads and get them in this week or next. Even if we don't read them on the show, you'll be entered into the drawing for next week. Be good Christmas for somebody. So send them to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. Thank you, Mary. We're going to let you go find some coffee in that hotel someplace.
All right. Yeah, I'm going to do my best.
All right. Sounds good. And we'll talk to you again next month. Merry Christmas to you and your mom.
All right. Merry Christmas to you guys too.
And we will see you all tomorrow morning here on Horses in the Morning.